afternoon to everybody. I want to say welcome back to Crime Prevention For Real. Today, I'm your host, by the way, Judge Sawyer. Today, we are extra lucky to have an active member of the Sentencing Foundation who is invaluable to our growth. His name is Robert Williams. I want to welcome him to the show.
Thank you very much, Judge. I'm happy to be here.
Well, let me just say a couple things. The Sentencing Foundation, and again, I welcome all of our listeners at all times, go to thesentencingfoundation.org so that you can learn more about how our program, in fact, delivers crime prevention for real. And the first thing I want to say is that when we structured the Sentencing Foundation, we realized that resource-based sentencing and supervision needed logistical support, which the Sentencing Foundation fulfills, but it also needs resources. And the reentry resources, a lot of folks I've found as a judge who operates this program, the most efficacious programs, the ones that work the best, are the ones that are led by formerly incarcerated people. Why? Because they've made that jump from coming out of custody, maintaining a plan, and staying out of custody. And what I found is that all too often, after a long sentence, people will come out, and because they have to eat, they're not able to take what they've learned to help the community. And so a big part of the Sentencing Foundation is to support those smaller, efficacious resources that gives a whole new industry and a whole new stream of direction for people that come out of jail that don't want to look for a job. They want to help go back to their communities and help, but they don't know how they're going to help their community and put food on the table. And so that is why a big part of the Sentencing Foundation is to support folks creating nonprofit organizations and grants to those nonprofit organizations. And so when you reach, go to thesentencingfoundation.org and you want to be a resource, a reentry resource, but you don't know how, reach out to the Sentencing Foundation, and the person that you will talk to quickly is the gentleman in front of me right now. His name is Robert Williams. We call him our entity guru. And having said that, Mr. Williams, I'm calling Mr. Williams, but me and Robert go back a long way. Robert, please tell our listeners exactly why I call you our entity guru for the Sentencing Foundation.
Well, the good part about my career, I don't always have to talk about what I do. I like to show. And I'm always happy to meet so many people. I met around the city many over the years. When you're active, you will all meet each other. But many people don't realize what I do until they see later that I'm an accountant and I help people with their organizations. And when I go on people's board, I don't just take everybody's board. My thing is making results. A lot of people just jump on the boards and they get a title. They talk about where they went to school, which is nothing wrong with that. It is a little bit, but that's my opinion. But have some meat behind what you're doing by seeing who you helped.
Well, I got to stop you right there for 1 second. I don't want my listeners to misunderstand. Robert is not trying to pat himself on the back, but please don't think he's excluded from those Alphabet Club folks. Please don't think that he doesn't have a master's in international taxation. Please don't think he has not had all the credentials to be an accountant. Please don't think he doesn't have all of the paperwork behind being the entity guru that he is now. So he's not going to toot his own horn, as you can tell. So I had to throw that in there. All right, go ahead. Keep talking. Well, I don't want folks to think that just because you say you don't go after folks with all of these degrees, I don't want them to think for 1 second he doesn't have a bunch of them.
Right. Well, I'm glad you clarified that, because I'm truly about an action plan.
Right.
And any education we get on any level is not where we got it from, it's what do we do with it.
Sure, you're right.
That's the biggest thing. And it's funny, we're talking about the Sentencing Foundation. I'm looking forward to helping anyone with the organization on the grassroots level. That means those of you who have a thought and an idea, I would love for any of you guys to reach out to Sentencing Foundation and come into a room together. Let's see if we can pull together and listen to so many of the ideas that you have and create even more of an organization than just an individual organization. Now, those are already fully established or been doing it, you know, for years and trying their best, I want to taught you guys to elevate. One of the things we want to elevate, keep in mind, a nonprofit organization is designed to assist communities across the world. That's the reason for nonprofit organizations, to help different causes, different means, or different any energy that people see fit, from art to culture to violence. The nonprofit has a reason for succeeding in different communities, and we got to make sure that's clear. So on the grassroots level, I'm happy to lend my talent to helping a grassroots organization become part of the Sentencing Foundation resources. Because she is absolutely correct. When you have individuals that may brush with crime, they got certain resources you can get them before they come back. You have individuals that have done a lot of time in crime, and it's a transition back to society. Some of them are more comfortable staying inside because it becomes institutionalized. Mm-hmm. But many have a support system that come out and don't ever go back. So if we can find a way to increase that, to help the judge to increase that, especially working with people who already been there, they sometimes are the best resources. Absolutely. To explain to somebody on that path not to get there.
Yeah, I say this because, you know, who's the best person to help a drug addict not be a drug addict? A former drug addict, mm-hmm. right? They've walked that path already. They've been down that road. Right. If you can't empathize with the person and understand where they're coming from, you're not going to be able to reach them. And if you can't reach them, you can't help them.
Right. So working with the Sentencing Foundation, I'm definitely looking forward to working with any organizations to help you, not just to get your nonprofit status, but also to work with you to manage, to understand your budget. Your budget is your business plan every year. Management is how you make a profit. Now, the profit means you just want to have cash flow for operational when you get to a nonprofit organization. So at the end of the year, if you have a surplus, it has to go back into programs. So when you fill out something called a 990, many, many people lose a nonprofit status once they obtain it because they don't fill every year a 990. That's a tax form that even if it's zero, you got to still send it in. Right. If you miss 3 years, you lose your nonprofit status and got to reapply.
Wow. See, a lot of people don't know that.
Right. And a lot of people don't think about that. But when you operating to get help for, let me give you this. Think outside the box mm-hmm. when you want to help our community. One of the biggest things to help someone on a path that's sometimes unfortunate in and out of the system is reading. Mm-hmm. Let's see how well we can all read together. Mm-hmm. Let's get books in front of our people. Anyone that's working, that's one program. Anybody got a program that's guys reading a part of it. Not just saying what the problem is, let some young people, older people, sit them down and let's read the newspaper and have a conversation. Not to be critical who's the smartest, just to see the comprehension that we're dealing with. Mm-hmm. So we in turn can start testing our own. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of our people, especially get older, they get in trouble at 19, 18, 20. A lot of them get to be 25, 26 sitting in the jail cell. Mm-hmm. And they are extremely smart.
Very.
They done grew. Their knowledge is high. Mm-hmm. So little things like that, when we're looking for organizations to work with us, not just to say, hey, look at Sentencing Foundation, we got something we can help. My thing is I'm going to push you to push yourself to help in another way. Okay, cooking, culinary skills. That's some of the jobs people have gotten in many, you know, restaurants all around. Let's increase that. Have a program that you work with some young people. Finding a facility to cook. So if they come in for the Sentencing Foundation, or you're trying to get them not to go to jail, but we're coming up with a skill set. That skill set, now we're getting seed money from the foundation, but when you start your organization, you still want to go after other monies. Mm-hmm. So you have to show more what you're doing. Now we know construction work, carpentry work, contract work is always on top of the agenda. Keep that alive and find rehab housing. While everyone currently in the city of Philadelphia is talking about the K&A area, which has its challenges, it also has some cheap real estate that maybe we could scoop up some of them houses and use as a training facility to train us how to fix them up.
Yo, I got to be honest with you. That is one of the things that I have been really trying to get folks to think about, because we have a huge housing crisis in the city of Philadelphia. And so when I say a huge housing crisis is the fact that a lot of people are being priced out of their neighborhoods, right? And so a lot of folks that are in and out of my courtroom, a lot of them, because they have no place to go, right? They commit these crimes out of desperation because they have no place to lay their heads. And then when they come out of jail, they still have no place to lay their heads. And so one of the resources in my courtroom that we have, the two major resources that we have difficulty maintaining, and that is housing for everybody and mental health treatment for everybody.
Right.
And going back to what you were saying, it seems like the best kind of a program out there is to grab a lot of these houses
yes.
that are plighted in neighborhoods, take folks that are reentry folks, and teach them a skill of carpentry so they can rehab these houses and have a place to live at the same time.
Right.
So I'm a big proponent for that. But let's get back into some things that I know you're not going to mention, like MBS Corporation. Tell us about MBS Corporation, because quite frankly, I have been so impressed with how understated you always are, Robert. You don't come and toot your own horn. The reason why I asked you to become the Sentencing Foundation's entity guru is because of what I've known you have been doing for years. We're going to first talk about MBS, and we'll come back to the other projects.
MBS, that actually stands for Miss Betty's Son. The reason that I adopted the name Miss Betty's Son became a nickname. I don't really have a nickname other than that. Sometimes if you're growing up in a community that have aggressive tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you see the children that have challenges, you know who they are.
Yep.
But nothing is more challenging to somebody look out the door and see, I know that's not Miss Betty's son.
Right, right.
Oh, Miss Betty's son wouldn't do that. Oh, you Miss Betty's son, you know. So sometimes you get away with some things because you Miss Betty's son, because you're the good kid. But then sometimes it's pressure because the image sometimes was a little bit higher. Like, what do y'all say? I do know how to... Do I curse? Yes, I did. The first time I cursed in front of some people, they looked at me like, I don't believe you did that.
Miss Betty's son
so
don't do that.
I learned to respect and love my mother with that. My father's name is Mercy and Betty Wins, but Miss Betty's son has a better click. So I got to give my father his credit as well, because they were married 48 years before he passed away. But
that's amazing in and of itself.
Being around and having that, my mother taught me the value of being nice and the strength of being good people, not nice people.
Good.
Nice people smile and laugh. We like a lot of nice people. But being good people is mean turn the other cheek but still be smart. Forgive and forget, but forgive but don't forget. That's
right.
How you stay strong.
Right.
And watching her actions, some of those things are what I incorporated. At MBS Management Business Solutions is what I created. My first one actually was CGI, which I still have. And that's Common Gateway Interface. That means we got to create a common ground, open up the doors to create the gateways for success, and start interfacing our people with opportunities.
Okay.
But MBS is budgeting. I can't say this enough. Every year, you should have a business plan. It's called your budget.
Mm-hmm.
In the judge's case, that Your Honor. I hate saying judge because I prefer to say Your Honor because I think she deserves it. But... you got a certain amount of people come in your courtroom every year.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at your calendar and say how many people you're going to have come every
mm-hmm.
month. You know
yes.
how many your month. You plan your time around that, your schedule around
I
that, because you know when you're going to be busier versus other times.
I do.
That's still, believe it or not, an unofficial plan.
Right.
When you have your business, whether you're selling a product or providing service, always look at the end of the year, what you want to do next year based upon what you did the current year.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're just starting out, dream of what your plan is.
Mm-hmm.
Then you look at your expenses on what did it take to cost to get to those goals. Those are things that I like to make sure people emphasize for the next 1 year, 2 years. You plan out 3 to 5 years, especially if you get contracts. If you get certain nonprofit monies, they can come with a 3-year term, believe it or not, if it's a contract. I also want people to know, if you get a nonprofit, you're looking for grants so much that you're not looking at the Red Cross for what they're doing from the federal government, mm-hmm. that they're looking for nonprofits to give a contract to. Mm-hmm. And that contract could be for 3 years. So the very thing you're thinking of, and I give them Red Cross a shout out, they just happen to be on a parkway, but I work with an organization that got a federal contract, it went through the Red Cross, and they carried out the mission of the contract. Mm-hmm. Everything has a reporting system. That's why I would definitely love to make sure while we're doing the Sentencing Foundation that everyone that touches it, I will be evaluating if you already established. Yes, I will, because the Sentencing Foundation is first to me. But I'm willing to lend my love and my heart to make sure everybody gets strong with some good information. Mm-hmm. But if you get the money from us as a seed money, because we're giving you the bodies to help, I want to make sure you know the other sources to look for to help run your program.
Exactly.
And they do come down from the federal government over to certain huge nonprofits. People don't realize the Salvation Army get them, RHD get them. You got many of these huge organizations in our area that sometimes are looking for the community nonprofits to feed the money through.
So don't sleep this, you all. The reason why that Robert is our entity guru is because he helps not just nonprofit organizations. He helps you create LLCs, limited liability corporations. He helps you with financial literacy. He helps you grow the business. Talk a little bit more about how you help folks grow the business and figure out what kind of entity they want. Because sometimes you could be a for-profit organization that maybe you're a consultant business because you're helping us with some of the consultants that the Sentencing Foundation is using grow their business. Mm-hmm. They can be a for-profit business that works with nonprofit organizations. Talk a little bit more about how selecting the entity will help them decide what kind of financial literacy they need and what kind of budget and planning they need.
One thing, as a corporation, you're either profit or nonprofit. Most people use LLCs because you've been informed that an LLC protects your assets, protects your business, protects your person. No, it don't. You're still an entity when you sign that paper. You protect yourself by growing it at its own leg.
Right.
And then also, you must have insurance for your business. Certain services can get by without insurances all the time because you're providing a service. Mm-hmm. So it's just talking. But if you have a profit or nonprofit and you have people in the street working for you, or you have any energy, we have many people coming to your building or your place of work or your establishment, whatever, wherever you're working from, you want to have general liability insurance. If you start having people work for you, you want to understand workers' comp insurance. Those are two major ones that we don't talk about enough. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to what type of organization, that's usually a decision at the table. Most people do LLC. You wind up being really an S corporation. Because
what's the difference between an LLC and an S corporation?
LLC, real limited LLC and LLP are two terms that people don't really explain. It's a partnership. Us three in here, we go for a partnership. We create an LLC. We got our percentages. And it's a limited liability company. Most law firms has to be an LLC.
Why?
Because they're partners. LLCs cannot incorporate.
Ah.
I mean, lawyers cannot be a corporation. They must be an LLC. That is the biggest, most significant area for LLCs. And you see they got all those partners they talk about.
Oh, I see.
When they do at the end of the year, it's a huge LLC. They got a 1065. There's a big sheet that fill out all the partners. That's a huge tax return. That's a real book tax return. But individually, a S corporation and a sole member LLC is kind of the same people. Now, you're going to always meet somebody that's going to pull out the book and debate me about the definitions in writing, but at the end of the year, they're the same. The insurances is what protect your business. Now, as a corporation, there are different advantages depending upon your field, and I will have to go into detail and even research for the particular type of business to see what that would be most applicable. But when you, and then also, if you start under one entity, you can change to another. If your LLC,
tell me about that.
If your LLC is a process that you can go through and change to a S corp, you can change to a C corp. It is a process. It is different forms. There's many forms out here that we don't even touch.
Okay, wait. So wait. What is the difference between an S corp and a C corp?
Okay, now that's the big one that requires the most dialogue. A C corp, you will hear people say about taxation. That's where it pretty much comes down to. C corporations have to pay taxes, whereas a S corp or a LLC form 1065, profit or loss carries to your K-1, which carries to your personal taxes, whereas a C corp does not. It stands on its own entity.
So if you had a, I'm just trying to break it down a little bit because we all don't know all these terms and right. And look, I've got a bunch of degrees and I don't know those terms, right? Because I don't use the math side of my brain, right? I'm not a math and science person. I'm more of a history and sociology kind of background. And so you got to slow down with all those numbers, right?
Okay.
So if you have an S corp, mm-hmm. right? And or even an LLC, right? And at the end of the day, you owe some taxes, but your corporation can't pay them. Does that still wind up being a personal problem for you?
Well, that's the thing. The corporation is its own entity, but profit or loss at the end of the year is carried to your personal taxes. So let's say,
what do you mean by carry to my personal taxes?
You do a K-1. Is a K-1 at the end, everything is done, all the money is in there. And let's say you have a $25,000 loss. When you take it to your personal 1040, it's a line.
Oh, I got you.
That you have, and it's a $25,000 loss from your corporation. You got the entity number.
I got you.
So let's say if someone made $100,000, that loss takes the income down to $75,000.
Right. So let me try to break this down for listeners. So if, for example, I'm working a job and I'm making $70,000 and I also on the side have mm-hmm. a business that's a startup business and it's an LLC and I wound up having a loss of $20,000 at the end of the year, I can take that $20,000 loss and offset it from the $70,000, so I'm only paying taxes on the
$50,000? Yes.
Okay. Now, never knew that. See, I'm learning some things.
And keep in mind, if your S corp or LLC makes money mm-hmm. and you make an additional $100,000, you have to report that as a gain.
On your personal... Well, wait, right. So doesn't the corporation have to pay the taxes too?
Now, if you are a functioning cash flow, it's most important in your company before you get the profit. Most people will, in the organization, let's say you got 5 members and you're just spreading it out, you will take the corporate check to pay the taxes from your personal in return because you should send them in together. The S-Corp. But the S-Corp LLC, you finish that tax return, and you immediately do the personal tax return.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of mail them in pretty much at the same time. And whatever the debt is, you should pay that debt from your business account.
You know, and this is the exact reason why you hire an accountant, folks.
Right. Now, not to say that always happens, but that's what you want to get to because that shows the health of your business. Now, when it comes to a C-Corp, the one thing about a C corporation, you get to carry losses on a C corporation. So if you make,
what do you mean by carry loss?
If you make you start off. Most people start off at a loss.
Right.
Let's say you have a loss of $300,000. Next year, let's say you have a gain of $100,000. You carry the loss from $300,000 next year,
and so you still have a loss of $200,000.
It can go down. It can go up. There's no real set time limit. Now, one thing I want to clarify for people since we're talking about taxes. If you ever hear of anyone getting into some of the most trouble for taxes, it revolves payroll taxes.
Mm.
Profit or nonprofit, you have to pay the payroll tax. That's a different animal that some people get mixed up. And the challenge is great to get to a payroll. in any business, because that means you're really healthy. That means you got enough revenue coming in to pay people. They're paying people to do a job. They're doing a job. That means your organization or company is working. That's a good thing. When they get paid, if they get paid $1,000 and $250 was for taxes, you give them a check for $750. That $250 has to sit into an escrow account. That's the IRS money for that person. That's saying that they paid their taxes.
Oh, I got
it. As
you.
A company, you have to match certain percentage, which is, let's say you match the $250. So those monies had to sit in a escrow account. If your business ever files in 941s without sending that payment, that is theft in the mind of the IRS.
But you know what? And let me flush this out a little bit more. Let me flush this out a little bit more for our listeners, because it seems to me like for the IRS's point of view, is the person that is getting a payroll check from your company has already paid their taxes through payroll, because all those deductions that come out when you get the check. And so at the end of the year, that employee is going to put paperwork in to get a tax refund for the taxes they've already paid.
Right.
So if you, as a company with payroll taxes to pay, if you don't pay the IRS the payroll taxes that have already been paid or supposed to have been paid by the employee, like everybody's gotten a paycheck and seen how much money comes out of the taxes.
Right.
And so at the end of the year, they take their 1099 from, not 1099, their W-2s. They take their W-2s and use that to figure out what money they get back.
Yes.
So if the government is giving back money that was already taken out of payroll, if the corporations are not paying the payroll, then I never really understood why payroll taxes created such a big problem, but that clears
it should be an escrow account. And yes, you got many sources when you get to an account, and there's many payroll companies that help with that with no problem. But the reason I mentioned that, because I've seen, unfortunately, I was in a meeting with some very educated individuals with an organization that was having trouble with their taxes. They got into the rumor mill. And it didn't make sense, because somebody said their nonprofit don't have to pay taxes. I met the chairman of this particular organization just by chance. And I said, okay, when's the last time you sent off your 941s with the payments? And she laughed. She was not an accountant. She was who she was. And she was a very smart woman. But out of all the drama that was around her, she don't know me, but she, you know, we see each other. And I asked her, I said, so when did I send something off your 941s? And they had hired an accountant that did not. She didn't know what to do with it. She said, how did you know? I said, because, and I explained what I just explained here. And she was a very smart woman, but you're not in that lane. And I'm sorry, but you got such bad service.
Right.
And that's why they were in trouble. Now you can work it out, and you got to work that out. And all the IRS letters you get, if you ever get payroll and you get a letter about your 941, don't ignore that one. Because that's criminal. They can possibly send law enforcement. One thing we talk about, Sentencing Foundation, one thing I try to always talk to younger people, everyone, you got a right and a wrong, and you got a legal and illegal. We, as people, got to talk about that a lot more.
We do.
I said, now in this case, all these people here sometimes doing that with their payroll are not nowhere near criminal minded, but they just broke a big law.
Right.
They actually helping people, doing a good work. But this is why I will not just sign to be anybody's treasurer.
Right.
Because
no, but that makes
perfect treasurer,
sense.
You're the first one they go after.
But you know what? That makes a whole lot of sense, because if you have a nonprofit organization, you think that I don't have to pay taxes because it's a nonprofit organization.
Right.
But if you have payroll that you have to make, you have an obligation to pay the taxes that are paid through the employee's payroll.
And it's
the withholding taxes.
Because it already should be in an account.
Right. And that's why it's called withholding taxes.
And it's called the escrow account that you always should have. I'm glad we're talking about this, because this is not something a one-time deal. This will be the information I will go over quite a bit with anyone that comes through us.
Right, right.
Because even if the organization is working properly,
right,
I still want to meet their accountant and ask them questions before we give any funding.
Right.
Because I want to make sure you're in good standing. So they're going to have to provide for us a copy of their latest 990s. They're going to have to provide for us certain financial information to make sure y'all in good standing.
See, I tell you right now, my friend, you're talking yourself into being more than the entity guru. You're talking yourself into a lot of information, especially as we start to move forward to give the grants out. There's a lot of things that I'm hearing that need to be considered in the process of deciding who does and doesn't get grants at all.
Yes. And now I'm glad you said that. Some people may have their paperwork tight because they've been around, which is great. But I want to also don't discourage anyone who's just thinking about an idea, who's just started something, to come to the table and let me work with you to get you. Because I prefer to go to other people that you can see as an example. And maybe you're that gentleman that's realize you got this great contracting skill and you want to show others getting out of what you did to get your work, but you had no knowledge of any of the financial stuff, but I'm willing to work with you to train and help you establish a board. So we don't want to ever put anything out there for y'all not to come, but I want to have like a new beginners program. If you come in, I want to put you in a new beginners program type of energy. But then those who already have it, I will expect more. If there's anybody, God forbid, if you come in dropping names on me, thank you. I'm going to look for perfection.
Okay.
So if you're telling me you're somebody, and like I might be humble with my degree, but because I'm too old to talk about degrees, that's why I laugh about it. I said, if you don't have a track record to show what you deal with over the years, ain't no sense of mentioning you got it.
Oh, I know that's
I said, the only place I look for a title, if you're my doctor, but scientifically. I said, heck, some of the best lawyers I met don't even go to law school.
Okay.
Let me meet my jailhouse lawyer. He got research on everything you want. You know, but the only, you know, so I look for it to have our knowledge and don't get my own embrace it. But I want to make sure we all embrace ourselves. One thing I want to touch on with financial literacy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't do a lot of shout outs to anyone, but I like to talk about history for wisdom. Milton Street in the city of Philadelphia during the 60s and 70s, used to go into vacant houses. He pushed the envelope when our communities of North Philly were falling because it was a red line. Not just because everybody didn't want the properties, they couldn't get any money from the banks to do anything with them. So that's a history. We got to look at any of the neighborhood. Okay, we see what's being gentrified. Let's look at what's not. And if we go over there tomorrow, let's fight to lift the red line so we can do something ourselves.
Right.
Because if we do get an opportunity, we can change any neighborhood around tomorrow. No ifs, no ands, no buts. If we get enough people out and we get the right training, and we know that red line is not there where everybody want to beg for our support in many elections, we got to make that a clear, clear agenda item.
I know that's right. And let me say something. If anybody out there got lost in any of the mentioning of S corporations and C corporations and the numbers on the tax form, the takeaway that we want you to have, the takeaway is if you have a game plan to win to benefit others, if you have an idea on how to help the reentry community, which is what the Sentencing Foundation stands for, you don't need to understand everything that Robert just said. Because guess what? I have tons of degrees and I don't understand everything that he said. All the takeaway that you need to know is to go to the sentencingfoundation.org, reach out to us, and we will very gladly give you an opportunity to talk directly with Robert Williams, who will be able to direct you and also not just direct you on how to create your entity, but direct you on which entity to create and which direction makes the most sense for you. So if you take anything from what we're saying about this whole segment, please take that. The Sentencing Foundation is here to help rebuild the community one person at a time, and it takes all of us to do it. So I want to shift gears a little bit.
Okay.
I want to shift gears a little bit right now. And I want to go into, we talked about how you help us create the entities. Talk about the nonprofit organization that you created at 21st Norris Street. Please let us tell us how you transformed your neighborhood in North Philly. And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, this is an organization that was created. He'll tell you in a minute how long it still exists as we speak today.
Yes. Coming from, I always joke about when people say hood, I had to redefine some words that we start using. Hoods mean economic deprived conditions. We like to claim a hood when we want to think we somebody or we want to be tough, which irritates me. Because some of the people that created some of these so-called tough names were living and surviving what was laid out. There's a lot of historical input implications that helped that to happen. But in the process, when after Million Man March was over, mm-hmm. many people came back to go back to their communities. And Brother Wesley Wilson Bell, I'm going to give him his props. He created Men United Against Violence Network. And he got everyone to come to 19th and Gerard, all the different ex-gangs to come together. And everybody was from there attempting to do their community organizations. Mm-hmm. A lot of them have still been doing quite well in their efforts to make an impact and be a part of their community. And everybody talking about not just their children, we talking about their grandchildren, some even great-grandchildren, how old people are. What I did for my 21st and Nashi family, I incorporated them. Mm-hmm. I work with others to get theirs done as well. Mm-hmm. But I am from 21st and Nashi. Mm-hmm. And one of the first things we did, I wanted to let people know the structure that we did. When we had the cabarets, everybody come together, they see us, we got a name recognition. The gentleman, he's passed away, named Raymond Carter, was gentleman, did time in jail, gratis for lifer. He got out. And around that time he got out, you know, he said, you know, want to give something back. My partner, Jesse Harris, Sugar Bear, that's my buddy. He did time in jail when he was younger. He got out. He started working at Temple for 35 years, worked in their kitchen, and never turned back. So when you get these stories coming together, mm-hmm. and we got the other positive stories from our community that we don't talk about enough. Mm-hmm. The organization set out to bring that together as a family. So everybody talk about the ex-gang, but the thing that made them so, what we say, tough, wasn't because they could just fight, it's because they had support and as a family. Mm-hmm. And that's the concept. I've never had to do anything. I don't have any record, but that's my family. That's the love. And it's not just to glorify because we're so bad. It's because we had a certain commitment and connection
to each other.
So some of my friends that wind up unfortunately incarcerated, I never stopped being their friend. My friends, where young people don't have nobody teaching nowadays, didn't want me to. I'm going to neighborhood bar now in the North Philly. They're going to put me out because I don't fit inside of the establishment. That's an insult to some people, but there's a respect that they don't want me in there. Now I'm like, I'm a grown man. What can you say? But no, I don't. So what we did, we adopted the school. And it was at the time, it was on the list. It was going down because there was cops up there every day, everybody trying to become a charter school, which I'm not a fan of. But in the process, when we got involved, the cops up there every day to zero. Nobody asked, what did we do? And I was on another particular radio show and he was blown away. Mm-hmm. He said, I never thought the day would come. I would hear this 21st and NARS community organization, mm-hmm. and the school was quiet and clean. Only thing we did was gave the love of attention and time.
That's what it takes.
Attention and time. Gave them, I started the chess club, had them play intramural sports. Mm-hmm. I told the principal, don't worry about the school district, but they're telling you they don't have. This is what we're going to bring in. There's a lady, Miss Hattie, she passed away, unfortunately. Her and I started the, I went to college. When you come from a neighborhood that got challenges and you go to college, you become the extremely good kid. Mm-hmm. A friend of mine, Mr. Marlon Wall, said, Bob, you never left. Because I started a tutor program when I was 20. I was always in corporate America doing everything, going around, but I always had time to be in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. No big thing. That's just who I was. But he said, you never left. And I looked at all of us that went to college from the neighborhood. Nobody seen them. So how can I look for a bunch of children to do better if those of us that's supposed to be the educated ones, especially
leave
my lawyers.
Leave and don't come back.
Especially my lawyers from down my way, and I'm not going to call three of them out that's from my North Philly neighborhood, but I beat them up all the time. They shouldn't just see Mr. Williams. They should see us. And what happened, I did a career day at Douglas after school got cleaned up. the children seeing some of these individuals on television. And it psychologically realized these gentlemen sat in the same classrooms that they sat in. Mm-hmm. So I encourage every school to do a career day. Mm-hmm. But any of us that went to these schools to be the one that the children see. A buddy of mine has his PhD, and when he went to Franklin, he was not the best student. Everybody assumed that he was going to be in a whole nother path. Mm-hmm. He wanted to work in the law enforcement.
Stop.
And he got his PhD.
Stop.
Today.
Stop.
And he was someone that one summer, he fought so much, I was asking him not to fight. That's how many fights he got in. It was like, come on, man, you really got to fight today. Mm-hmm. But having that history inside of me, that wisdom, when I went to the schools, I talked to the children and minority family. We went to the school.
See, now my listeners are starting to see why I love this
we
man so much.
We went to the schools. Mm-hmm. We got in there and gave it the love. When we started helping kids go to college, we did a college fair at Jones Tabernacle Church. But it didn't stop. The study buddy program, helping kids help themselves, giving most kids a place to at least just do their homework. Mm-hmm. Before we say what they know or don't know, if they just do their homework and the atmosphere,
and
they
also
learn.
And also a place many times, you know, people, especially children that come from disadvantaged, economically
yes.
disadvantaged places, they don't want to say, oh, I don't have a computer at home. They
right.
don't want to say, oh, it's not quiet enough for me to even work there. Oh, I have to step over 25 people, and when I walk in my door, it's chaos, and so I'm not...
So
not only am I not doing any work, I'm trying to stay out of that chaos, and so
right.
they're never home to do that. That gives them a place that they can actually have an opportunity to do something.
And that's was some of the found from working with the churches, and people move on, some people got older, and people passed. So that's a challenge, because most of us do it out of our pocket.
Mm-hmm.
But what we have done now, we always kept our organization, everything, we have our meetings, and we have, you know, do things in the community. And we also have to cook out, that's one of the things we do around the city. But we are trying to put more meat behind it again.
Right.
So a lot of things worked. Some of that first tier children that we helped that went to college, they joke with me today. How did you guys go to college, Mr. Williams? I did. I wanted to make sure you knew that you
could
go.
That you had the opportunity.
And how to go. And many people who, especially who come from down the way that had a record, their kids don't. Their grandkids don't. I got one of the gentlemen from my Nartry X Gang family that has a name. His daughter is very active. One of my proteges. And she works out there in Southwest Philly. One of the state reps.
Give
out
her
there.
A shout out.
Ms. Belinda Mills.
Nice.
She is, her father was who he was from back in the day. She's not. Everybody I know, I said, so I'm not, when we look at any energy that I have from back in the day, we got to do a better job of making sure that tomorrow's kids don't do the same, but understand they are coming from that. And that's a role, that's a leg up. And some of the people don't realize how many people have a hand in that minority family have done a great job of looking out for people in the community with no funding, no money, no recognition. Did you have some challenges of people in the community that still have challenges? Yes. Are they descended from some people that somebody know? Yes. But I look at the numbers that don't.
Right.
look at a friend of mine, Ski. I don't do that very often. His father had a huge name. He had a mistake. His son does not. And now his grandkids are so far removed, they wouldn't even know what the hood looked like.
Right.
While we're doing a transition of feeling the emotional side to make us get stronger, I'm looking to increase our financial transferring of wealth.
Right.
Let's
we're the first create the financial wealth, though.
Right.
We have to first create the wealth before
yes.
we can turn it over. Because, see, historically speaking, you know, this is something that kind of, as you can tell, just excites me. Because, you know, historically speaking, the biggest asset
uh-huh.
that you pass on from one generation to the next is a house.
Yes.
And if you look historically how it's difficult for Black and brown folks to, you know, if we go, again, I'm a history major,
mm-hmm.
English and business administration,
yes.
double minor. Like, so the history of it is we came from being chattel, right? And so we moved into an area where we weren't allowed to own property.
Red line.
And then we moved to a place where, okay, we'll let you own it, but we won't give you any resources to own it. We won't
right.
lend you any money. We won't give you, we won't teach you financial literacy. We won't teach you the importance
right.
of what a credit score looks like, or how to repair that credit score, or how to use that to be able to own property, and then how to leverage the property that you have to utilize that money in order to create more wealth.
I'm going to give you a secret that's going to blow your audience away.
What's that?
With all the challenges of many people coming home from jail, 5 year, 10 year, 15 year, if you've been in jail, you never created a debt. Your credit score might be better than you realize.
Oh my goodness. Yes. Yes. No. No, no, no. That part I do know. Because there was a program that we were using. Right. There was a program that I can't remember the name of it, that we were using.
Uh-huh.
And it's predicated upon folks that have no credit.
Right.
And teaching you within the first 3 to 6 months how to create credit. To get a utility bill,
yes.
And then to get one of those credit cards that you have to put money into first, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you use that credit card to pay the utility bill, and every month instead of giving the money to the utility bill to the utility company, pay it through that credit card, and that creates your credit record.
Yes. So hopefully, when somebody organization, some of the things I hear again, I'm all about sharing knowledge, and I'm trying to be, I don't need to be the biggest one, because I prefer to have 1% of 100 different things than 100% of one thing.
Sure, you're right.
So this knowledge I'm giving, I hope everybody gives something to think about. If you got an organization out there already, go to your meetings, look it up, research it. But if you think about it, it's most of us getting out of high school or college. You're doing this, you're trying to work, you're trying to get things, you're trying to spend money. You get this bill, you don't have that money, you go through a challenge.
Right, right.
Being in jail loses your time. Yes, it does, you can't get that back.
You can never get that back.
You take a deep breath. We talk about financial literacy. Anyone getting out of jail is a different energy if they be patient and take their time.
Right.
Because you don't have a work history, but you don't have a debt neither.
Exactly.
Now, okay, I know the court sometimes have a debt that you got to pay, and I know that could be a challenge. But if you jump on that right away and pay it every month consistently, you're building up your credit because you pay about the first of the month.
Yeah, and well, I agree. There was a couple of thoughts that passed my mind that I, you know, me as a sitting judge, it's an interesting dance that I do as a sitting judge to make sure that nothing I say or do impacts my position as a sitting judge. And of course, you know, you have to worry about making sure that you don't say anything that's going to be interpreted a certain
right.
way and
yes.
so forth. And so I might start a statement and then you might hear me back away from it,
yes.
mainly because I don't want to put things out there where people will interpret them in a way they weren't intended.
Yes.
And then have an unintended consequence to come back in my direction. So let's focus more on, so tell me a little bit what's going on with the 21st and Master Norris Street Community Committee today. Tell me what they're doing today.
Well, it's interesting today. This is beginning of the year. So one of the things we're looking to do, we did actually a expungement program.
Mm-hmm.
And we're looking to do that again for the community, for people having challenges with their records. My thing is I'm looking to do a Father's Day event.
Nice.
Because we know lack of fathers. We know our marriage rate is low. We hear all the challenges. But can we take a deep breath and humbly acknowledge those that are doing it and in hopes of motivating others to join in? If you sometimes celebrate something, to me, maybe you can get different response.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely have our cookout every year, but then our cookouts, we bring the most of the resources. Mm-hmm. Now we have.
When's your cookouts?
We have them down in North Street.
Not where? No, when? When?
Third weekend in August.
Third weekend in August.
Yes,
okay.
I'll definitely send you a note.
Yeah, yeah, because you see me thinking about what I have to do on the third weekend.
And we're
going to
do a little bit different this year. We always have different. We have resources, but we're going to increase that. We're going to increase. Everybody's getting older. So some of the success of the children and grandchildren, we need to see that positive success.
Sure.
We know those many people are getting out of jail. They've been in jail for years.
Right.
Some of them are older, have challenges. Some of them wrote books.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to give congratulations for those who got out. But then those who may have wrote books and got stories to tell, we want to highlight that more. Mm-hmm. But then also economically, it's always been on our agenda to teach more the financial literacy. And a lot of people have done well. So my thing is, I will have two tables there to talk about whole life insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the number one ways that other ethnic groups pass wealth. Whole life with a cash value. And that's something, not just a term, I want to educate on life more.
So what is your opinion on that, though? We're coming near the end of it, but I want to get into that a little bit, because there's a big debate about buying term insurance and investing the difference versus a whole life policy that has a cash value. And some of them have diminishing cash values that you think you're buying onto something that's going to give you something in the future, but you're really not.
I'm glad you asked that. There is no wrong answer. It's an evaluation on who the person is. Some people spenders, some people are not. If you're not a spender, you can take your chance to get something at a lower rate and be patient. But some people that are spenders need something a little bit more aggressive.
So it kind of helps as a savings account for them.
But what happens, let me give you an example, because it is a way to do things with term as well. So it's not like I'm against it. But some of the ways you manage wealth, let's say, for example, if somebody does get a whole life in policy for their child, and it's $300,000, and when that child turns 18, they could borrow against that whole life and understand the cash value. They borrow that money to put their kid through college. They in turn pay it back, but they still get the interest on the $300,000.
Right.
And if it's 20 years, and let's say the kid only needs $150,000, and that thing is a 20-year policy. At the 20 years when it matures, you don't pay the money back for the education. That rest of that money that's left, it goes to that kid for their house. So that's one scenario. And with term, people can give me that other argument. I don't care if you got another, if somebody got a term discussion, bring it. But as long as we start educating ourselves about it, you get term, you get whole life, but at the end of the day, it's one of the ways that you transfer money through that you pay off consistently that get a certain value.
Right.
Because annuity, that's all they are, annuities.
Right.
And we just got to get more educated in term, whole life, and annuities, and increase that dialogue. So I will have that at my community event. Because most of the time we think of life, we think of death. And then one thing about history, because I was a history major first, believe it or not, I love history all the time.
Me too.
I talk about it all the time.
Me too.
After World War II, the country exploded economically. All the highways and everything we hear was built. At that time, mortgages blew up for Europeans.
Mm-hmm.
The low-income homes initiative, I forgot the president, blew up. So while other people were getting houses, even when they were not as smart or they didn't know they had opportunity,
we were getting public housing. That we
and
didn't
we had
own.
A percentage of our people was owners, and it was a small percentage. And some people who were educated, went to certain schools, they got that. But then some of our people got the homes from somebody knowing someone, but they weren't traditional mortgages. They used to pay them directly to the person they brought it from.
Right.
The traditional mortgages as we know it, we didn't, as black people, didn't catch up to the late 70s, early 80s, when we started finally getting them.
Right.
So I'm not mad at it, but I want to make sure we keep the wisdom and correct. So we find a way to get the K&A, the Badlands, all these terms and titles that keep the real estate low. Hopefully we can get somebody to fix some of these houses one day and start moving in there and making value ourselves.
I tell you, the lessons that were shared in this past hour, I got to tell you, that Robert Williams has the kind of information on how to build wealth, how to share wealth, how to have our folks. Because listen, let's face it. What is wealth in the first place? Financial independence allows you to do what you wish with your life. Right? I tell people every day, it's a sad day that being able to buy shoes for your kids when they need it makes you happy. But it's a certain day not being able to buy it that will make you unhappy. So financial planning is about planning your life and being able to be self-sufficient. And I think we're coming to a close on our second session. We will definitely have to have you back, Robert, because some of these concepts are just difficult for people to wrap their brains around quickly. But that is the beauty of going to thesentencingfoundation.org. You can always get a hold of Robert Williams by going to thesentencingfoundation.org. Until next time, have a great day.